From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on this morning's forum program in our opening hour, Congress is nearing a September 30th deadline to pass a spending bill in order to keep the government running. On Friday, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives approved that legislation, but it included what Democrats call a poison pill, a provision that would defund Obamacare. The Democratic-controlled Senate is expected to reject the plan. We'll examine the politics of the budget battle. Is the country headed for a government shutdown? Join us next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. The House of Representatives voted along party lines on Friday to approve a stopgap spending bill to fund the federal government through mid-December, but the bill included language within it to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, or what has come to be known as Obamacare. The government deadline for running out of money is only days away as the fiscal year ends on the 30th of this month, and without a stopgap measure, a government shutdown will begin the next day. The fight to keep the House resolution intact and to delay funding for Obamacare now goes to the U.S. Senate. And we'll focus on the ongoing political battle in this morning's opening forum hour. Joining us from the nation's capital is Julie Hirschfeld Davis. She is a politics reporter with Bloomberg News, and welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. John Bresnahan also joining us from Washington, senior congressional reporter for Politico. We welcome you to the program, John Bresnahan. Paul Singer is with us. We'll go to John Bresnahan later on in the program. Paul Singer is Congress and Politics Editor for USA Today and joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome, Paul Singer.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Actually, Julie Hirschfeld Davis, let me begin with you. This is a lot of the usual polarization, I suppose, but at this point, with things moving toward the Senate and sort of smart wag saying it's doomed in the Senate or doomed by an Obama veto, we never have, let's have Senator Ted Cruz, who is a Republican senator, speaking yesterday on Fox News. And I want to get your response. Let's hear what he said.
If Harry Reid says, you know what, I'm going to run the Republicans over, I'm going to ignore the bill passed by the House of Representatives, I'm going to ignore the will of the people, and I'm going to do this on a 51-vote threshold, then from my mind, it should be an easy decision for Senate Republicans to stand united and to support House Republicans. And I'll tell you, any vote for cloture, any vote to allow Harry Reid to add funding for Obamacare with just a 51-vote threshold, a vote for cloture is a vote for Obamacare. And I think Senate Republicans are going to stand side by side with Speaker Boehner and House Republicans listening to the people and stopping this train wreck.
Well, Julie Hirschfeld Davis, it sounds as if he's rallying the troops to unify. And is that a pipe dream or is that a real possibility?
Well, I think it's a pretty long shot right now, mostly because, you know, you hear him really trying to turn the tables there, saying, well, it wouldn't be Republicans who are shutting down the government. It would be Democrats who are shutting down the government with their unreasonable demand to add funding for Obamacare. But the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. It's been the law of the land. It was upheld by the Supreme Court. And a lot of Republicans see the political danger for themselves in waging a fight to defund it when it's certainly not going to go anywhere. It's certainly not going to be ever signed by the president. They remember what happened in the 1990s when the Republican Congress, in a showdown with then President Bill Clinton, went to the brink with a shutdown, and it didn't do them well politically. And they are looking at the polls as well. And so I think Ted Cruz has a big job, not just to try to get this through all the way to President Obama's desk, but to try to get it through a lot of senators in his party who are thinking in a lot more pragmatic of a way and see that, you know, this is just going to be, you know, what's plan B here? If this were to get through the Senate, it certainly wouldn't be signed by the president. And then what do they do next? And I think a lot of Republicans are nervous about what the next step would be.
Yeah, in fact, there is a schism in the Republican Party between the Tea Party faction and those who are, as you say, willing to compromise. In fact, even Rand Paul said publicly, we can't defeat Obamacare.
Right, that's right. And, I think the big question right now is, where they're going to settle in terms of a plan B. I mean, there's no question that most, if not all, of the Republicans on Capitol Hill would like in some way to change or halt or delay the Affordable Care Act. They don't like it. They think it's bad for business. They think it's bad for the economy. They think it's going to raise costs. And actually, if you look at the public opinion polls, a lot of the American public agrees with that. What they have to figure out is, what is a workable solution that they might be able to get agreement on? And it's going to have to probably go beyond health care, and it may include some elements of tax reform. It may include the Keystone Pipeline. It may include other things that Republicans have always said that they wanted but have not been able to get in this kind of gridlock period. And that's really kind of, I think, if you fast forward a couple of months, where we're going to be in terms of, how are they going to keep the government open? How are they going to then, looking forward, raise the debt ceiling, which has to be done eventually? I think they're looking for sort of face-saving, politically advantageous measures that they can all agree on that wouldn't be such a tough sell.
Again, Julia Hirschfeld-Davis with us from Washington is a politics reporter with Bloomberg News, and Paul Singer is Congress and politics editor for USA Today. And Paul, you think we're going to see a filibuster here?
Well, I think that the Republicans in the Senate will use, that is, Republicans, I mean, like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee of Utah, will use every resource they have available to try and stall this vote. The issue is, I don't think they're going to have the votes to support them. So I don't think even the bulk of the Republican Party in the Senate is going to, as Julie said, is going to go along with this plan, because they don't really have another option, and they don't have the votes to win. Filibuster, talking filibuster, who knows? I mean, I think at this point, if you believe you're going to lose, you might as well lose loud and make a stand. So they've got a week to basically burn up. I would not be surprised to see them use it.
Well, they've also floated the idea that they may delay the funding of Obamacare for a year. And what's the possibility of moving toward that?
Well, that would be a sort of a second round. That would probably be in the debt ceiling vote that's going to come up sometime in the middle of October. And honestly, the politics of that are a little more interesting, because then you get into a question of is the administration willing to negotiate on the debt ceiling or not? Do they want simply a clean, whatever, 1 year extension of the debt ceiling, or are they willing to discuss some sort of broader economic package? A one-year delay of Obamacare, I think, would be unlikely because, again, it is the law of the land. It is a signature achievement for President Obama and the Democrats. It doesn't strike me as something that they would negotiate away. However, if you were going to do some sort of a grand bargain, some sort of a big fiscal deal, and there's a lot on the table, well, then that might be possible. It's just at this point we haven't seen any real motion towards a grand bargain or towards some sort of big fiscal deal, and certainly not as part of this continuing resolution, the short-term funding mechanism.
Well, there's a lot of politics at risk here. In fact, I was struck, as I suppose both of you were, by President Obama's language in Missouri to the auto workers, talking, they're trying to mess with me and they're messing with you, and a lot of the talk about harm to the economy and government workers being out of work as a threat. The poll that CNBC did, All American Economic Survey, is really quite relevant here. When asked about defunding Obamacare, if it includes a government shutdown and defaulting, 59% of those polled opposed cutting funds to the president's signature health law, which, only 19% supported it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, these are really complicated polls to read, right? I mean, it's a really complicated question to ask somebody. I'm not sure how sophisticated a respondent is going to be when you ask them a sort of multi-tiered question. Do you believe in defunding Obamacare plus also cutting government debt plus also shutting down the government? It gets a little complicated, right? I mean, I think what is true is that by and large, Americans are not in favor of shutting down the government. They find that to be an alarming sounding thing. But Americans are also concerned, very concerned, about Obamacare, how it's going to work, whether it's a good idea. I'm not sure you can reconcile those things into a coherent vote on Capitol Hill. You know, it's tough when you are trying to turn these very complicated issues and real policy. I mean, it's hard. Defunding Obamacare is not simply a single sentence. I mean, it's hard to do. You got to figure out, well, what part of government do we then stop? What part of government do we continue? What do we do about where the states have gotten, where they've already built exchanges? All that becomes a very complicated policy. It's not just simply something, well, you know, 59% of Americans say yes.
Paul Singer, again, is Congress and politics reporter with USA Today. He's with us from Washington, D.C. And Julie Hirschfeld Davis, what is this shutdown going to mean? I mean, most of the effect, from what I mean, would be in shutting down museums and national parks. We'd still have Medicare and mail delivery and Social Security. What's at risk here?
Right. Well, I mean, a shutdown, it's a little bit of a misleading term because I think that conjures images of, you know, the entire government comes to a halt, the lights turn off, and, you know, checks stop going out. That doesn't really happen. At least it wouldn't happen in the short term or in the realm of the negotiation we're talking about here. But what does happen is, you know, some of the things you mentioned, which are quite visible, you know, national parks are closed, you know, federal facilities are either closed or their hours are limited. It will have, and I think the bigger issue is that, you know, people will consider it as their elected representatives kind of throwing up their hands and saying collectively, you know, it's just too hard for us to agree on something practical. We're just gonna shut it down. And you mentioned before President Obama's rhetoric late last week. I mean, I think we're hearing a lot of this from Democrats because they recognize how this resonates with the public. Terms like legislative arsonist. I think that was Nancy Pelosi.
You know, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because we have that cut, and I'd like to get we're so embroiled in politics here, and that's indicative of what we're talking about on the Democratic side. Let's hear that cut from Nancy Pelosi.
There are lots of excuses that they use, but for many of them, I call them legislative arsonist. They're there to burn down what we should be building up.
And that was Nancy Pelosi on CNN. That's pretty strong language, Paul Singer. Arsonist, huh?
It is, and I, you know, it is very true that the government, you know, if you shut down the government, it does not close on Tuesday morning, right? I mean, there are essential services. There are people who are deemed essential. My recollection, and Julie, you might have seen this number too, from the last time there was a government shutdown, similar lines of half the federal employees still went to work.
Right.
So, you know, it's not, but keep in mind as well, and we learned this in the sequester, that government agencies operate with a certain amount of flexibility to determine what is essential and what is not essential. And we used to refer to this as Washington monumenting, that when the budget cuts came through, the National Park Service, the first thing they would do is shut down the Washington Monument because it would attract the most attention from Americans. When in fact they probably could have taken that money out of, well, I don't know, coffee and mail delivery in their own offices. So the point being, you will see agencies in some cases close down a service that is particularly public facing, so the public experiences the shutdown in an immediate way, whether it's closing the call center at the IRS or shutting down new applications for Social Security disability or something like that. That's where the government has the ability to make it uncomfortable for the American public so that there's an outcry.
Well, a government shutdown won't necessarily stop Obamacare from being implemented, but it would mean the Republicans would probably get blamed for the lack of implementation, wouldn't it?
Yes. And in fact, I mean, yeah. They wouldn't say blamed, though, of course, for the Republicans. They would say they would take credit.
Well, that's true, except John Boehner is also saying the American people don't want a shutdown, but they also don't want Obamacare. Maybe he's not reading the American people right. Julie, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting because I think in theory, and Paul talked about how difficult it is to kind of parse the response you get from these polls. You know, if you look at how people think about the healthcare law, a lot of people are skeptical, a lot of them disapprove, and in a lot of cases more, the majority disapproves. But then if you ask them the second question, well, what should we do about it, it's usually fix it or plug the holes or improve it, not just kind of get rid of it altogether. And in fact, in a lot of states where, you know, the governors have seen their way clear to actually implement either part or all of the centerpieces of the law, namely the Medicaid expansion, they know that people feel pretty positively about that. That for a lot of these states, including some of those that are governed by Republicans, they like the idea of expanding Medicare so that more people can take advantage of that. And as much as in theory they don't like the idea of a quote-unquote government takeover of healthcare, there are aspects here that people do not want to see go away, keeping kids on their parents' healthcare till they're 26, you know, not having pre-existing conditions, deny people insurance anymore. There are certain aspects of this that even the Republicans know their constituents like and view in a positive light. So it becomes a little bit harder of a political sell to sort of say, well, we're getting rid of something that, you know, you haven't gotten yet, so you don't know you don't like. But we're also, by the way, getting rid of things that you've already gotten through this law that you kind of do like or are, have been told to count on now in the coming months. And this, you know, the enrollment starts in states that will have them stood up either by the state or the federal government about the same time as the government was shut down. So it kind of muddies the waters there, and I think it would be a difficult message for Republicans to try to take home with them.
Well, the Republicans, I think it's safe to say, Paul Singer, are pretty confident somehow that we're getting back to the raising of the debt ceiling. They're pretty confident that President Obama will negotiate on that, as he has in the past, despite his vows not to negotiate. And I think it's safe to say, isn't it, that the Democrats are betting that the Republicans won't go past the September 30 deadline because of the unpopularity of a shutdown.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the debt ceiling one is more interesting in some ways because it is a little more murky. Shutting down the government, you know, the September 30th deadline is real and it's hard. You can't spend any money on October 1st if it hasn't been appropriated. So the deadline is much more real in that sense, and the impacts are very, very clear. You know, people will not go to work the following day. So I think the Democrats feel they really have a significant leverage advantage on the government shutdown. The debt ceiling, the mid-October date for the debt ceiling, is very different. It's a much more complicated point to make. The deadline itself is a little squishy. It's not entirely clear when, in fact, we would have to default on any one payment. And that wiggle room, I think, gives the Republicans more flexibility to negotiate their point. Also, keep in mind that nobody likes debt. And so the language of the argument is on the Republicans' turf because we are saying we need to borrow more money and we need Congress to approve borrowing more money. That is a good playing field for Republicans to make the argument that, okay, we'll agree to borrowing more money only if we'll stop spending some.
Doesn't seem to be that much, stir or ado on Wall Street about all this. I mean, it hasn't seemed to have affected Wall Street.
It did last time. Last time we went to the edge, there were actually some significant,
I'm talking about right now, though. I mean, at this point. Yeah.
Well, and I think part of it is they hadn't gotten close enough yet.
but also we did. We are seeing the Dow Jones average falling a little bit this morning, and, you know, people are attributing it to this kind of like, it's okay, the reality setting in, it's Monday, and next week, if this isn't done, the government could shut down. And I think, you know, what you're seeing in the bond market is a lot more sort of, we've seen this movie before, it's not going to sort of react too precipitously to the threat of a, you know, debt downgrade maybe 2 months out from now or a month and a half out from now. But I do think that there is some uncertainty that is going to start to take hold, and that will affect members of Congress for sure, as it has to. It's true what Paul said, that, you know, the debt ceiling may be a little more fertile ground for Republicans, given that the timing of it is a little less firm, and the message is a little more clear in terms of, you know, we've spent too much. I think most Americans would agree with that. It's out of control. I think most people would agree with that, and we should do something about it. But on the other hand, a lot of Republicans and Democrats have the business community whispering in their ear. You saw the U.S. Chamber of Commerce come out again last week and say, you know, hey, we need to raise the debt ceiling. You know, just so everyone knows, this is like a real thing that we need to do, and we can't not pay for the spending that we've already incurred. And that's basically what raising the debt ceiling is. And a lot of these Republicans who are, you know, making a lot of noises about it now have voted for it time after time after time after time in the past. Like, you see Mitch McConnell, the minority leader in the Senate, would have a kind of a hard time explaining why he was voting against that. So I don't think anyone really wants to get to that day.
We're talking to Julie Hirschfeld Davis, who's political reporter for Bloomberg News, and Paul Singer, who is Congress and politics editor for USA Today. I'm sorry, Paul, you had to add something?
Oh, no, only that I think Julie's exactly right. And I think, you know, the debt ceiling will raise. I mean, the Congress will raise the debt ceiling at some point. The question is whether there's a pound of flesh that Republicans can extract in exchange for that. And you know, again, if you know the outcome already, then do you lose all your leverage? It's sort of an interesting question.
Well, since we're talking about pounds of flesh, I don't want to necessarily go to the Merchant of Venice here, but there is a serious and enmity-filled split within the GOP ranks that I think we ought to analyze at least for a moment. Peter King, for example, said this will show that when the Senate votes down, presumably, what the House passed, that Ted Cruz is a fraud without any influence in the party. So the language gets more harsh and bombastic within the ranks of the Republican Party, even.
There is a real divide. I mean, I think there is, you know, 3 weeks ago, John Boehner said he was not going to demand the defunding of Obamacare in passing a continuing resolution to keep government open. And then he reversed himself. And he reversed himself because it was very, very clear that amongst the grassroots and amongst a sort of purist wing of his party, this was a red line that you could not cross, that we had to demand this. This was our moment of leverage.
But I think the president may have learned his lesson on red line language, but that's...
Yeah, right, I know. But it's true. I mean, this was not where the House Republicans intended to go a month ago, and yet it is where they have gone. And I think there is a lot of hand-wringing. I think actually Julie covers sort of that piece of it much more closely than I do, that you know, there is a lot of dissension within the party about exactly what their goal is here.
Well, a lot of it has Julia. Been personalized to Ted Cruz. I mean, you heard a lot of kind of grumbling, both some publicly but a lot privately last week, about House Republicans saying, okay, so now Ted Cruz is going to tell us how to run the House of Representatives. Like, he knows what's good for us. I mean, one thing to remember is, you know, as Paul said, the Republican Party is divided on this. You have, you know, the sort of mainstream Boehner style of the party would have been open for some sort of pragmatic compromise maybe 5 or 8 years ago. But, I mean, that is just beyond the pale as far as the Tea Party and the more, you know, sort of hard line of the base is right now. And they're the ones that have the biggest microphones right now. They're the ones who are raising a lot of money off of this. They're the ones who are threatening to and in some cases already fielding primary challenges to Republicans they feel are insufficiently conservative on this stuff, or insufficiently, you know, dedicated to going to the mat for, you know, well, why can't we shut down the government over this? Why wouldn't we, you know, take this fight as far as it goes? But also, you know, there are differences between the House and the Senate. These House members are up every 2 years. They're the ones, more of them, are the ones who would draw primary opponents if they had to take tough votes on these issues. So it becomes a very sort of divisive fight within the ranks of the Republican Party and the elected representatives on the Hill, because Ted Cruz has, you know, it's very clear where he is going with this. It's very clear that he's trying to, you know, sort of make a name and a political profile for himself, and a lot of other Republicans are with him on that, on this fight, and some House Republicans just don't want to go there, and they don't see the political upside, and they don't see where it gets, ultimately, where it gets the country.
Now, this is a battle royal, and we're talking about the House vote to cut funding for Obamacare with Julie Hirschfeld Davis and Paul Singer. And let's hear from you. If you have something you'd like to contribute to this conversation, we'd like to hear from you. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to call us at our toll-free number and join the program. It's 866-733-6786. Again, you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us. Our email address, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. Congress nearing a September 30 deadline to pass a spending bill in order to keep the government running. On Friday, again, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives approved that legislation, but it included what Democrats are calling a poison pill, a provision that would defund Obamacare. We'll hear your thoughts when we return. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The House voted along party lines on Friday to approve a stopgap spending bill to fund the federal government. But with that came language essentially to dismantle the Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare as it's known. And we're talking about what looms ahead, particularly as the Democratic-controlled Senate is expected to reject the plan. We're examining the politics of the budget battle and really asking a question about whether or not the country is headed for a government shutdown. Julie Hirschfeld-Davis with us, politics reporter for Bloomberg News, and Paul Singer, who is Congress and politics editor for USA Today. We also want to bring John Bresnahan in because he's in the House gallery now and can talk about developments that are expected today in terms of scheduling and procedure. John Bresnahan, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. And I should mention again that John Bresnahan is senior congressional reporter with Politico. I'm looking at your latest article, John, and it suggests that there may be a meeting taking place. Is that in the works, or is that just simply at this point being talked about?
It's being talked about. This was a meeting, potential meeting between President Obama and the four top congressional leaders, Senate Majority Leader Reid, Speaker Boehner, Senate Minority Leader McConnell, and House Minority Leader Pelosi. There was some discussion of a meeting this week, but that seems to have been put off. Obama is taking a pretty stern line on both the CR, or the continuing resolution to fund the government, and the debt ceiling bill. And he had a conversation with Speaker Boehner the other day where he told him he's not going to negotiate on the debt ceiling. It was a clean debt ceiling increase. So it looks like there will not be any meeting right now between any of the national leadership until after the Senate deals with the funding resolution.
So what can we expect will happen, let's say, in the next 24 or 48 hours?
Well, there will be some discussions today between Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat in Nevada, and the Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky. There will be some procedural discussions about taking up the continuing funding resolution in the Senate. Reid will likely file cloture today, which means we'll just set up a vote for Wednesday. And this was on the motion to proceed to the bill. Before the Senate takes up a bill, it has to two sides actually have to agree to it. And if they can't, then the majority files cloture and forces a vote on. This is where Senator Ted Cruz, some of the other hardline conservative Republicans are filibustering. They don't even want to get on the bill. They don't want the Senate to get on the bill. So because they're arguing that once the Senate gets on the bill, then Reid can change the bill by a straight majority vote. But to win a cloture vote, he needs 60. He needs a supermajority. So it's kind of arcane technical procedure. But this is what Cruz and Mike Lee from Utah and some of the other hardline Republican conservatives are saying, we have to defeat this cloture vote. We can't let Reid be able to get on the bill and then amend it by just a majority vote. So Reid and McConnell will talk today, and there'll be some maneuvering and some jockeying for position on that.
Can you help us understand this procedurally? Because it's a bit labyrinthine, John. I mean, we heard earlier a cut of Senator Cruz saying we can stop Harry Reid with GOP unity and all that. But what about that 60-vote threshold for the House bill amendments?
Well, the cloture vote that Reid will set up for Wednesday will be 60 votes. And this is the motion to proceed. Before the Senate takes up anything, they have to agree. Both sides have to agree they'll take it up. Right now, Cruz wants to block Reid from getting 60 votes, so the Senate can't get on the bill. So because if he got that, then he could force Reid's hand. The Republicans could force Reid. He'd have to cut a deal. He'd have to make some kind of agreement with them to even take up the continuing funding resolution. This is really an inter-Republican fight. This is a Republican-on-Republican fight. This Cruz and Mike Lee and some of the hardline conservatives, they want to push their leadership into saying, we have 46 Senate Republicans. We can stop the Senate from taking up this bill. We have to stop them right now.
Excuse me, John. We're talking mainly about Tea Party Republicans, aren't we?
These would be Tea Party influenced guys, the harder line folks, and they want to stop. They want to stop the Senate from proceeding to the bill. They want to pressure McConnell and the Minority Whip, John Cornyn in Texas, both of whom are up for re-election next year, and they want to pressure them to hold the party together and stop Reid from moving forward on this bill. They think that it will give them more leverage.
Again, John Bresnahan, senior congressional reporter with Politico. John, you'll stay with us?
Yes, sir.
Till the end of the hour, we also have Paul Singer with us from USA Today and Julie Hirschfeld Davis from Bloomberg News. And we're going to bring our callers in and let's hear from you. Let's begin with caller named Eleanor. Good morning.
Oh.
Eleanor, you're on the air.
I just wanted to say, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but you're breaking up. We're going to have to go to another caller, and that's Brad. Hi, Brad. You're on.
Thank you. I want to just make a quick comment. I think one of the biggest mistakes that the Democrats made was to mislabel this from the Affordable Health Care Act to Obamacare. The Republicans weren't doing it to be nice. My question is something I really don't understand. There's a poll that's conducted that a lot of people are relying upon that says that majority of people do not want the Affordable Health Care Act. And the problem I have is that my understanding is that supermajority of the people in this country don't even understand what the Affordable Health Care Act is and what it will do and how it works, how it affects all of the aspects of the government. So how in the world could they vote that they don't like something or state in a poll they don't like something that they don't even understand? And the second question, I'm sorry I have, is very quick, is were the people ever asked, do you want a universal health care system similar to that which is being instituted in every other modern industrial nation in the world?
Well, we spoke about a poll earlier that says actually that Americans want to preserve the Affordable Health Care Act and or preserve things in it. That gets complicated in terms of, I think Paul Singer and Julie Hirschfeld Davis were both saying, in terms of how the polling questions are asked and how people are queried. The fact of the matter is, though, that at this point, I think there's a lot of pressure on Republicans because people, for the most part, want to keep at least parts of it, Paul Singer.
Yeah, but I think your caller is right about the language part of it. It's interesting. In the mainstream media...
You're right about people not understanding it, you mean?
Well, no. Also about the nomenclature. Democrats never called this thing Obamacare. In fact, some of them still don't like using that term Obamacare, but Obama himself has started to use it, at which point those of us in the mainstream media were also given permission to use it. It's a nice, easier explainer. But when you call something Obamacare, that means the, 40-some-odd percent of the American people that didn't vote for Obama automatically don't like the bill or don't like the law. So the caller is right about that. I mean, they really the nomenclature, it does not help the Democrats. And the other problem is also people don't understand exactly what's in the bill. So if you ask them, well, do you like Obamacare, they'd say, no, it shouldn't be implemented. If you ask them, do you like having your child being able to stay on your health care? Do you like coverage for your pre-existing condition? Stuff like that. They're like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And the public option was in play briefly in 2010, 11. It was something we talked a lot about, is could we go to a government-funded option like other industrial nations? And the answer was no. There just was not the votes in the U.S. Congress to do that.
Even President Obama backed single payer way back when.
Yeah.
Let me read a couple of comments from our Facebook page. Mike writes, there are 10,000 people a day turning 65 in America, and that will go on at that rate for the next 20 years. There is not enough money for anything else when the Medicare and Social Security bills come due. You and scream and yell and whine about trivial things like alternate energy infrastructure, NASA, defense parks, and how evil the Republicans are for trying to control spending, but it does not matter at all. The Medicare and Social Security payments will take all the money very soon. And Will writes, even sane people on the left call Obamacare a train wreck. It's ready for prime time. Why does Obama keep postponing the scheduled deadlines on its implementation? It's time to step back from the ideological battle lines and wake up, people. I want to read those two comments because here we are on the left coast, and there's pretty much in agreement with the hardliners on this. Julie Hirschfeld Davis.
Well, I mean, so two very good points, and I just want to quickly go back to something that the previous caller raised, because, I mean, this kind of speaks to why Republicans have decided to make this case, those who have. They understand that the public debate over the health care law is still very much in play, particularly with the enrollment period starting in October 1, and there is really a fight between Republicans and Democrats to define what this is, define people's understanding of it. Is it good or is it bad? We saw these creepy Uncle Sam ads to get people to try to not enroll, and we're seeing efforts on the left to get young people particularly to enroll. So there's sort of a live fight going on while this government shutdown debate is happening in Washington. There's a live fight going on around the nation to define what this law is. So people still really don't understand it, and they really, I think Republicans and Democrats are warring to try to get them to understand it in the way that's most politically advantageous to them, which goes to what this writer is raising in terms of sort of what's baked in the cake already. I mean, the law, as long as it's on the books, the health care law is mostly mandatory spending. So when you're talking about shutting down the government, not funding it, that the health care law will continue. Medicare and Social Security, which are the big drivers of our long-term debt, will continue. And the irony here is that the math is actually fairly simple for what a deal would look like if Republicans and Democrats really wanted to get together and do something about those longer-term issues, which are what Republicans say is their main impetus for waging this whole fight, is to get government spending down, get us to a point in Washington where we're spending within our means. The problem is that with all the politics surrounding this debate, they can't even get to what people generally refer to that as a grand bargain. If they were to somehow figure out a way to agree to measured cuts to Social Security and Medicare paired with higher revenues that would solve the debt problem, they can't get there because of all this interim bickering over health care. Is it good or is it bad? Should we not have passed this law? They kind of can't get past that to get to the actual bigger issues that are supposedly driving this whole debate.
Well, in fact, I've got a listener here who asks on our website, and John Bresnahan, let me go to you on this. What exactly do Republicans say is wrong with Obamacare, aside from the fact that it was signed into law by a Democrat?
Well, they have a lot of objections, and as Julian Paula pointed out, there's been a number of problems implementing Obamacare. President Obama's already delayed the business mandate, the employer mandate, for a year, which leads Republicans to say, well, if the employer mandate, and that's covering any company with 50 or more employees, if that's delayed for a year, why not delay the individual mandate? The other thing is Republicans are saying, you know, there are a number of states with Republican governors, and I'm thinking two major ones, Ohio and Florida, where the governors have made it difficult to set up. They won't participate in any health insurance exchange, and they've made it difficult for individuals to do that. So they are trying. Democrats are crying foul and saying, look, Republicans are trying to sink Obamacare, not only at the federal level, the state level. Listen, this is all an argument, the way Republicans make it. This is all an argument about freedom and choice and should there be government-mandated health care. Well, you know, they had that fight in 2009 and 10 in Congress, and then Obama got reelected, and Democrats are saying, look, you know, you lost the presidential election. This is the law of the land. The Supreme Court upheld it, you know. Let's implement it. But there's as you said before, there's the Tea Party Republican movement, a most conservative element of the Republican Party is continuing to fight this. It is good politics for them inside their party. That's kind of the insane thing here, is that it's really good politics for them. It's been, none of them would be for shutting down the government or defaulting on the national debt. But inside their party, the politics of it are very good. The loudest voices, the most strident voices, the most energized voices are the ones who come out and say, we got to stop Obamacare. But, you know, this is kind of a last-ditch effort here. Obamacare will be implemented. How well that does, and there's clearly a huge number of problems on the side of the federal government on implementing the program, and a lot of concerns that, you know, but how well that it falls out and unrolls will be something that everyone will watch very closely.
Again, John Bresnahan with us from Washington is senior congressional reporter for Politico. Let me read some more of your comments, and then we'll go to your calls. James writes, Obamacare is not a train wreck. U.S. medical billing is a train wreck. The Access to Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, is exactly what it says. It gives Americans access to affordable care. If Tea Party Republicans ever had to apply for individual coverage, they would know how bad it is and why people choose to avoid coverage. Avoiding coverage sets you up for bankruptcy if you go to the hospital. Some comments on our Facebook page. Sarah writes, let's hold the House Republicans salary hostage unless they start actually governing and pass a budget. Jeff writes, it's disturbing to see how much fun Republicans are having as they toy with the futures of tens of millions of Americans. They've had years to come up with a credible alternative. If they truly had America's best interests in mind, they would work together with the president to make changes. However, their only interest appears to be power for themselves. And a tweet from Chris, who writes, the Affordable Care Act passed Congress, was signed into law, and was upheld by the Supreme Court. On what possible basis is this challenge being made? Beth writes on our website, these Republicans talk around the issue but never come up with solid solutions for helping families with chronic medical issues or disabilities who simply cannot afford coverage or lack coverage via work. And an email from a listener named Frank who says, I've come to the conclusion that the media is primarily responsible for the dysfunction of our political system. News media interviewers, will not challenge politicians' positions, thereby helping to educate the public. The Ted Cruz fiasco is frustrating and painful to watch. If the news media had consistently challenged Cruz's nonsense, the factual flaws in his reasoning, his lack of any alternative solutions, he never would have been able to get this far. What is the news media afraid of, and what could be going on to block the media's responsibility to educate the public? And one more email from Shankar, who writes, it's clear that the National Republican Party has followed the Tea Party crackpots off the deep end. The right's fulminations against the ACA, which originated from the Right Wing Heritage Foundation and was first implemented by Mitt Romney, makes absolutely no sense. Let me go to more of your calls, and we go to Frank. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I want to talk to the larger political calculus of the block and cloture. Do the panel members believe that the Republicans feel that they will be blamed less for the default if they do it this way than if they hold the process up later down the line?
Who wants to jump in here?
I can handle that. Yes, the Republicans think if they can block cloture, that forces Reid and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and the White House to cut a deal at that point, because we would be a week away from a shutdown and Reid would have to cut a deal. And they honestly believe that they can force Obama's hand, if not on this continuing funding resolution on the debt ceiling, they can force a delay in Obamacare. They honestly believe this. The president has already delayed the employer mandate. They believe they can force a delay in the individual mandate. They think if they put enough pressure in the right place. Now, the CR, the continuing funding resolution, is not where the leadership in either the House or Senate on the Republican side wants to have the fight. They think the fight is better on the debt ceiling, that they have more leverage there, and that they genuinely, honestly believe that they can win this fight.
And I thank Frank for the call. I want to go to another caller up in Oregon. That's Yasha from Imnaha, Oregon. Good morning.
Good morning. What I'm not hearing in this conversation is a discussion of the larger issue, the international implications. Is there no memory of what happened the last time this fiasco took place? Does no one remember the downgrading of the American, what do you call it?
The credit rating.
Credit rating, yes. Does nobody remember that? Does no one remember the impact on the economy? And the other thing I'd like to know is why is no one pointing to the fact that on the very day that Obama was first inaugurated on his first term of office, Mitch McConnell said, and this is a direct quote, we will do everything in our power to see that this president fails. Why is there no discussion about that?
Well, you brought up two salient points, and I think, Paul Singer, let's go to the first one. I mean, in terms of international implications of government shutdown, big time.
Yeah, well, and I think, and Julie was talking about this a little bit earlier, that indeed, if the bond markets begin to react, I mean, thus far we have not seen significant financial market response to the possible either shutdown or the debt ceiling, not to say we won't, and perhaps some tremors already this morning. But you know, certainly if we get to the point where debt default is a real honest-to-goodness possibility, there'd be huge international ramifications and significant impact on our economy. The Treasury Department has sort of run through some of the scenarios here, and they're just not pretty by any stretch of imagination. But it's unfortunately, it's sort of hard for us to, at this point, interpret the financial markets because the politics is all still so murky. It's hard to know what anybody would be reacting to. other than some sort of general concern that those Americans are crazy, we shouldn't be investing over there anymore.
Well, what about, and I'm curious how you read this, Julie Hirschfeld Davis, the second point the caller brought up, the link between wanting to defund the Affordable Care Act and Mitch McConnell's, I don't know, call it a vow to do everything he can to oppose and essentially derail President Obama.
Well, one quick thing about that quote, which I just want to point out, because it's a common misconception that Mitch McConnell said this the day that either Obama won or the day that he was sworn in. He actually said it in 2010, 2 years after the president took office, which doesn't really make a difference in terms of the substance of the point, except insofar as it was basically on the eve, it was in October before the November 2010 midterm elections. And he was making a broader point of how Republicans can be effective in an era where there's a Democratic president and he has an ambitious agenda and he's messaged it, you know, well, I don't know if McConnell would concede to him having messaged it very effectively, but that they had a lot, they were up against a lot. And he basically said, you know, we need to get our people out on Election Day and then we need to make clear what our agenda is and defeat him that way. And so that's where the point came up of the single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term president. That was the context. So, but I mean, so fast-forwarding to this debate, I mean, I think that if you were to sit down in a lengthy way with Mitch McConnell and a lot of other Republicans, they would say that the fight over the health care law is, in fact, a huge fight to make a distinction. You know, elections are about choices, and if Republicans want to be effective in future elections in the way they weren't in 2012, they have to make a more effective, more sort of cohesive distinction between who they are and who Democrats are. They think the health care law is the one of the best places they could possibly do that, just because of what the law does and their argument that this is a government takeover. We want to shrink government. They want to grow government. We want people to be in charge. They want the federal government to be in charge. I mean, they're not wrong that that is an effective argument to make. The problem is you have these two hard deadlines that need to be met, and Congress has become so dysfunctional that the only ground on which they can wage that message war are these two things, funding the government and raising the debt ceiling, that really kind of have to happen and that in the past were generally, you know, considered to be opportunities for everyone to make a big global compromise for the year or the 2 years, not for everything to sort of implode and sort of break down. So that's where they are right now.
Well, I'm also looking at another listener email. This is Linda, who writes, the economy is one of the most important aspects of the Affordable Health Plan. In 2008, when the economy crashed, economists told us the biggest single drag on the prospects of recovery was the out-of-control medical costs in the United States, and President Obama took on this challenge right away, and when the plan is implemented, it should, in the long run, have a very positive impact on the economy, and of course, it will be hugely beneficial for the health of Americans. Why don't Democrats speak incessantly about the economic benefits of this affordable health plan? Maybe, Paul Singer, they don't believe it?
Well, this is something that Democrats in Congress, and I think, you know, Bresnahan has written a lot about this, that Democrats in Congress have been for years angry about the administration having terrible messaging on this thing. They have not made that case sufficiently in the public. They have not made it clear exactly what the health care law is going to do that is good for you. They keep coming back to this, well, you know, pre-existing conditions and your kids on, you know, after graduation can still be on your insurance. But that's right. I mean, the math that the Democrats use and that the Congressional Budget Office has by and large played out is that this law helps with deficits in the long term. There are upfront costs, but over the long term, significant savings in the medical system. And I think that the Democrats have, particularly in Congress, have repeatedly expressed frustration that they feel like the White House has been essentially nowhere in making that case to the public and helping to drive the narrative.
You want to jump in here, John Bresnahan, from your perspective?
I do, and Paul is right. I mean, if you go back to the debate over Obamacare, and Julie and Paul were both covering it like I was, I mean, they lost the message war on that early on because right. It took them a year to put a bill together. And in the meantime, Republicans just said whatever the hell they wanted about Obamacare. They just, you know, the death panels and all that stuff. And, I mean, in 2010, they lost the election in part because, you know, because of the how poorly they had done that. And Nancy Pelosi at the time was saying, you know, Obamacare is going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs, and it's going to save us, tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in the long run. And she's probably right if it's implemented effectively. But they've been, I would think if you talk to folks on the Hill, there is no love among Democrats on the Hill about how the Obama administration has handled that. They've been meeting. Dennis McGunner, the White House chief of staff, has had to sit down with groups of red state Democrats, Senate Democrats up in 2014, some of these ones who are running in Republican states, and, you know, basically walk them through what they're doing. And he's had to meet with House Democrats. And think about that. If they've got to convince Democrats on Capitol Hill, many of whom voted for this bill, you know, that we're doing a good job on this, how are they winning that message war in the states? Again, this is, much of 2011 and much of 2012 was taken up by President Obama on running for reelection. And that was the energy that most of his time and energy was spent doing that. And then they thought in 2013 that the Obama administration would get up, would really start putting this together. But clearly, the implementation and the rollout of Obamacare has left a lot to be desired. And again, you've seen that by Obama himself postponing the employer mandate for a year after coming under tremendous pressure from the business community, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and Fortune 500 companies and all employers, because they didn't have the rules together. They didn't understand what their duties and responsibilities are. So now, and you see Republicans playing up, you'll see a lot of you've seen a number of low pay, but sort of hourly workers are already getting hurt by, or there are some chains, corporate chains that are already cutting back hours in order so they don't have to comply with new employees with Obamacare. So they're cutting hours under 30 hours a week. You've seen a lot of this, for instance, in the grocery chains. There's a number of them have done this. The UPS now says spouses will not be covered under the corporate health care, under the company health care policy. Now they'll go into the exchanges. So Republicans are taking these individual anecdotes and just hammering Democrats on it. And still, up to this point, I still think there has been Democrats, just from what we see here, they have not been particularly effective, and the White House has not been particularly effective on combating this stuff.
Let me just get to a final point. We've only got seconds left. Likelihood of government shutting down. Can I hear from each of you maybe a sentence, John Bresnahan?
I'd say little likelihood of government shutdown. The debt ceiling is a big problem.
agree, Paul Singer, I think, with those sentiments. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't think the government's going to shut down.
Julie Hirschfeld-Davis?
I think if it does, it would be very, very brief. But the debt ceiling is, as John and Paul both indicated, the big fight.
Thank you all for a most enlightening hour. Julie Hirschfeld-Davis again with Bloomberg News, John Bresnahan with Politico, and Paul Singer with USA Today. And we are here with you and will be with you for another hour. We're going to talk with David Kennedy in the hour ahead, who's written a book, actually edited a book, on the U.S. military. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.